Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. In this episode, we're joined by Daniel Hartung, an associate professor of pharmacy at Oregon State University. He discusses the recent findings of a study he and colleagues conducted on the impact that generic glatiramer acetate has had on prescription drug prices in multiple sclerosis, and what factors play a role in the rising costs of these disease-modifying therapies.
My name is Dan Hartung. I'm an associate professor of pharmacy at Oregon State University College of Pharmacy, and I do research on drug prices and economic issues related to medications for multiple sclerosis. We were interested in doing this particular study, and we've been interested in the rising prices for multiple sclerosis for several years. And one of the reasons we were interested in looking at this particular aspect of it was that people have speculated that perhaps that rising prices in MS, one of the reasons contributing to that was the relative lack of, or actually the absolute lack of, any sort of FDA-approved generic products within the class. And so in 2015, the FDA approved the first generic version of glatiramer acetate. And so we wanted to examine what the impact of the release of that medication was on the market, both in terms of use of branded Copaxone and the new generic, and pricing trends or cost per prescription trends before and after the release of that medication. So that was really the reason, just to try to gain insight into the impact of essentially the first generic within the class.
And now, what insights did you guys sort of gather from these findings, especially as related to the clinical community? You know what I mean? If you were speaking to a physician in the space, sort of what could this study inform them about the market for for MS drug pricing?
So we used publicly available data from the U.S. Medicaid program nationwide from 2011 to 2017 to examine utilization of all MS DMTs in that program, and also the cost per prescription, which is essentially a proxy of their price over this period. And essentially we just looked at trends before and after release of this generic version of glatiramer in 2015. And what we found, I guess, first in terms of the pricing of these medications is that after the release of the generic product, we found that actually the branded medication, Copaxone, increased significantly immediately after the release of the generic drug, which is a little bit surprising. And then the other thing we observed was that with respect to the other drugs, is there was really no impact in terms of the continued escalation in price over time of the medication. So overall, when we looked at just spending in total in the Medicaid program, although utilization was pretty stable during this period, that is total prescriptions, spending in the Medicaid program increased by about threefold over this period. So, and that was mostly driven by higher cost per prescription. Another interesting finding that we observed was that in the year and a half preceding the release of this generic medication, Teva Pharmaceuticals, which makes Copaxone, they shifted about half of their market share of branded Copaxone from the 20 milligram version of Copaxone to the newer 40 milligram version of Copaxone, which was not interchangeable with the new generic glatiramer when it came out. So obviously they anticipated that at some point the FDA would approve a generic version of Copaxone and took steps to, you know, mitigate the impact of that on their essentially their franchise product and kind of continue gaining revenue through the Copaxone franchise.
So is that, I mean, obviously there are probably a number of factors that you know, play a role here, but is that, in addition to that, I guess, what do you believe is contributing to sort of these rising costs of MS drugs, despite so much competition in the space?
Well, the reasons for that are kind of a little bit separate, I would say, than the reasons for just the escalating price over time that we have kind of documented both in this paper and other papers. Within this paper, you know, there was one manufacturer that came on the scene. Sandoz produced a generic version of glatiramer in 2015, and the price of that product was maybe about 20 or 30% less than branded product, which is typical when there's only one new generic manufacturer, and you really don't see a drop in acquisition costs from generic manufacturers until you have, I mean, a lot of people say four or five or six manufacturers, and then actually the generic market works really well at driving down prices for that particular generic. What the atypical thing was, or the thing that's, I guess, counterintuitive, is just this increase in price for the branded version of Copaxone. And that's been observed with other drug classes where the first generic on the scene comes out and the branded drug increases above what it was increasing before. And that may be due for a variety of reasons that are not clear to us. One may be perhaps a branded manufacturer, Teva, is, you know, still trying to, you know, they've lost a little bit of market share, and perhaps they're trying to eke out, continued revenue through, you know, if they're losing market, the only other way to increase revenue or, you know, is through pricing tactics. The other kind of more opaque and less knowable issue relates to rebates and behind the scenes kind of contracting. And so this is within ours, is studies within the Medicaid program, and the Medicaid program gets federally mandated rebates, and they're actually indexed to inflation every year. And so the Medicaid program, with the possible exceptions for a couple other payer groups like 340B and the VA, will often get the best net prices for across all payers in the U.S. healthcare system. So it's not clear exactly what state Medicaid programs were actually, in fact, paying for branded Copaxone. They could have had, quite large discounts that actually undercut the generics. So, but in terms of just the we'll say the list price for Copaxone, it did increase substantially or, you know, significantly after the release of the generic. Now, your larger question about, you know, what's driving prices overall in this market, you know, I think, speaks to the larger issue about just dysfunction in the pharmaceutical, U.S. pharmaceutical marketplace. So as is kind of obvious, demand for pharmaceuticals is really different than demand for other consumer goods. You know, you have indirect purchasers, third-party purchasers. You know, the consumer is not the person who can actually access it. They need to go to the prescriber. I mean, they're medical conditions, so it's not like TVs or shoes or things like that. The drugs themselves are highly regulated, and the cost to entry is very high. So there's a lot of different ways that, you know, differentiate medical care and pharmaceutical markets from other consumer goods, where, you know, the prices of TVs are vastly lower now than they were 10 years ago. And that doesn't work in pharmacy markets. And I think that's compounded by just the this dysfunction is compounded by the drug and financial and distribution chain that's very complex, where you have manufacturers distributing and selling drugs to wholesalers who then contract with pharmacy benefit managers, who then contract with pharmacies and third-party payers. So you have all these entities that pay for, move money, and move products around, and they each have contracts with each other that may incentivize prices to go in ways that, you know, are not aligned with the consumer. So these distortions, I think, create an environment where, you know, normal profit motives of, you know, these publicly traded companies that make these drugs, I mean, they need to make profits, just like, you know, tech companies or companies that make cars. But that profit motives isn't really curbed by, you know, normal market forces because of the reasons I just kind of laid out. And so we see the situations where prices actually are rising substantially and not falling over time, even with like added drugs to like the space, like as you indicated, there's many, many products within the MS class, and it seemingly more products have led to even higher and higher costs. Specifically within the MS categories, you know, perhaps is a little bit unique in that, you know, there are a diversity of therapies and they're diverse in terms of their efficacy. Some are, you know, have high efficacy, some of the infusion products, their administration, some are infused, some are self-administered injections, some are orals, their tolerability and side effect profiles. And so, there's not a lot of like kind of homogeneity with across the different products that, you know, would allow for perhaps the products to compete more on costs because they're kind of all carving out unique, you know, we're unique because we're oral, or we're unique because we've been around for 30 years, or we're unique because we're, you know, we have high efficacy. And up until the last couple of years, there have been no other like truly low-cost generic alternatives out there. So I think there's larger issues about the pharmaceutical marketplace, and then there's specific issues about the MS market that have really driven prices up as fast as we've seen them.
These other studies have sort of suggested that DMT costs in comparable countries can be, you know, 2 to 3 times lower than they are in the United States. Do you have any insight as to why that might be?
The U.S. healthcare system is unique in that we do, you know, prices are generally determined by, you know, the adage of what the market will bear. It's a free market as opposed to most other industrialized countries. Similar to the United States, oftentimes they have single payer or close to single payer healthcare systems where the single payer is essentially setting prices and saying, you know, we will pay, you know, X company, X money, you know, Y amount of dollars to, you know, to treat patients in our country. And it's like, you either take it or you leave it. And so that is how, in fact, they've been able to constrain pharmaceutical prices and costs in those other countries, whereas we don't operate like that for the most part. Now, there are some exceptions, like, for instance, the VA, very closed system and, you know, very closed, I would say, formulary or lists of drugs. And they, are aggressive negotiators and are able to get, you know, pretty large reductions in acquisition costs for many of these drugs. So the VA and other countries aside, you know, it is kind of what the market will bear, and the market does not function like it should for other consumer goods, as I previously discussed.
Do you feel that the price of MS therapies sort of impacts the accessibility to prescriptions, especially with regard to sort of the newer DMTs and, you know, some of these highly efficacious therapies?
Yes, I do. I think that high prices do affect access to medications. You know, I guess, first of all, you know, public surveys about healthcare issues consistently rank the high price of medications as, you know, the number one or number two issue that citizens want their elected representatives to deal with in Congress or whatever. And so I think it's a very front and center issue because of issues of, you know, patient affordability and things like that. Now, within MS, I do think that
these high prices do impact patient accessibility of drugs in a number of different ways. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society just issued a survey of, I think, about 500 individuals with MS and about issues about high DMT prices and how it affects access to the medications. And the results of their survey report that I think about 40% of individuals have altered their use of medications in response to high prices that they face. And I think more than that, maybe 50%, are very concerned with rising prices and are concerned about eventual affordability, even if they have insurance coverage. So many insurance varieties have either high deductibles or high out-of-pocket components, where, you know, one of the unique things about, I guess, pharmaceutical pricing is that while, you know, pharmacy benefit managers and payers will often get discounts through rebates, if patients have high deductibles or have to pay co-pays or co-insurance on prescription drugs, those co-insurance amounts are often based on the list price of the drug. So, you know, this common retort about, well, the list price is, you know, it's not actually what the payer is paying. They're getting a 30% discount or whatever. But the patient, if they have a 30% or 25% co-insurance on a $5,000 a month medic DMT, you know, that's a large amount of money that they have to pay at the pharmacy up front to get their medication. And then the other issue relates to kind of the hassle factors that patients and neurologists have to deal with. And, you know, insurance companies and PBMs will contract with these drug companies to have preferred tiering of their drugs within their formulary. And, you know, perhaps that tiering is based on kind of the contracting dollar amounts and not so much on, you know, what's best for the patient. And especially within this class where there's so much diversity in terms of how the drugs are administered, self-administered, infused, taken orally, you know, patients should have a pretty large say in kind of what kind of therapy that they are comfortable and really are interested in using. And so taking that choice out of their hands, out of the neurologist and patient's hands, I think has unfortunate consequences in terms of getting the best drugs for particular patients.
Yeah, so you mentioned obviously that hassle and sort of the impact. So obviously, I guess, whether or not they were intended, it seems sort of that this has placed kind of unintended restrictions on physicians' abilities to sort of prescribe specific therapies in some instances. And I mean, what sort of impact do you think that's had on clinical care? Do you think it's been negative, or, you know, is it a widespread impact, or is, you know, has it been sort of minimized because this maybe doesn't affect as many patients, or do you foresee it becoming a larger problem down the road?
I think this kind of the administrative burden that is borne by neurologists and their neurology offices and by patients is real. And, you know, I think it can delay initiation of medications. It potentially could disrupt therapy if perhaps, you know, patients switch. Let's say for Medicare Part D, you have to, you know, you can every insurance plan, you can re-enroll every year in different plans or different contracts. And if something changes with respect to preferred contracting, that could disrupt therapy and, you know, and precipitate relapse perhaps if patients are, you know, not taking the medications as they're prescribed or they're optimal. So I don't know exactly the precise kind of prevalence that these things are occurring. I just know that they're common, and, you know, you can talk to neurologists and neurology offices, and I think that this is like a pretty time consuming efforts that they have to invest in kind of dealing with insurance company and PBM administrative red tape to prescribe these drugs and make sure patients are have access to them in a timely fashion.
Is there any sort of message or takeaway that you'd like to sort of share with your peers based on what you've learned from doing studies in this space and, you know, these two specifically that we've mentioned here?
I think based on our most recent study, you know, we found that the arrival of the first generic in this class was pretty highly anticipated, but it didn't really, I think, move the needle in terms of moderation of the continued price increases of these other drugs in the class. And some of that may have been due to preemptive efforts by Teva Pharmaceuticals to kind of mitigate generic penetration in the market. And some of it may have been due to other issues related to the drug distribution system and kind of incentives there. You know, in terms of what do we have that to look forward to? The oral DMTs are probably the next medications that we may see generics and coming onto the market. Some of them are being held up currently in kind of the patent courts and litigation by industry and generic companies of challenging generic branded patents. So it may not be for, depending on how those court cases play out, we may not have more generics for another year or so. But even despite that, I'm not entirely sure what the effects of that would be given kind of our previous experience with glatiramer to this point. So, you know, I think that there's things to look forward to in terms of more affordable medications and generic DMT, oral DMTs, but we'll have to see exactly the pace that those generics enter the market and then, you know, the effects of that, both within those generic markets and just across the spectrum of other DMTs as well.
Thanks for listening to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. For more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.